It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to this week's Fergie Time podcast. Join me, Keith Jackson, the man himself, Barry Ferguson, and of course, we did promise you special guests. We've fallen flat on our faces a little bit this week. We do have a guest, but I'm afraid we can't call Gordon Parks special. There is special qualities about Gordon Parks, but not special guest qualities. However, Gordon Parks joins us in the Daily Record broom cupboard for this week's podcast. Now, what we will be discussing, we'll have a little look back to Friday night's horror story at Hampden, a little look forward to tonight's match against Belgium, but we'll talk in general, Barry, about your Scotland career, because there's very many interesting characters and managers that, you know, and we could do a little bit of insight into how it works behind the scenes, and we'll get all that. First of all, Gordon Parks, Partsy Parks. You didn't enjoy Friday night. Nobody enjoyed Friday night. In fact, I've already written a column today just saying if we could have a referendum to get out to Brexit international football, I think I'm almost there now. It's becoming a bit soul-destroying. And that's not fair on Steve Clarke because he's just in the job. But you were hoping for a bounce. The bounce hasn't come. And these two-week international breaks are just getting in the road of people having fun. That's my view, and I know that's your view, having sat beside you. You moaned your way through 90 minutes on Friday night.
I did, and it's become a routine now. You turn up at Hampden with a kind of preconceived opinion about how it's going to turn up, and I get this kind of apathy, which you feel before a ball's kicked, and that for me is alarming. I read your column. I thought it was really bang on, because there is a kind of school of thought now that the Tartan Army is so demoralised, have nothing, no crutch to believe that there's something better coming around the corner. And Friday night was more evidence of nothing there. Taking the lead should have galvanised the entire place. I didn't feel a bounce. I didn't feel an atmosphere that was going to carry us on.
And well, we had, what was the funeral music that we had for about an hour before kickoff? I've never heard of it. It was suicide music. It killed the atmosphere, whatever atmosphere was going to generate. Fergie, I'm telling you, this is actually killing me a little bit, because I'll be honest, a massive Scotland fan. It's all that's ever mattered to me.
I'll be honest.
And I'm losing the will to live with it.
The build-up to the game, listen to some of the players. I listen to Andy Robertson, who is our star player and captain. I felt there was a good feeling about the camp. I don't know about yours. I'm thinking to myself, do you know what? I think we might be able to get a result here, but
I did too. And that's what kills
I never
you,
seen the game live. I watched it when I came in Friday night. I watched a good 60, 70 minutes. I thought the first 15 minutes we were good, no, brilliant. But after that, I just felt, I don't know, there's something missing. And I'm with you. I do feel sorry for Stevie Clarke. I do think Stevie Clarke is a top manager. But he's got a hell of a lot of work to do. Because I do think there is good players, there's no doubt in my mind.
Well, we've got a real problem when there's only 32, 34,000.
Again, listen, I don't like Hampden. I never have enjoyed playing at Hampden. There's only probably two occasions in my career where I've played at Hampden, I don't know off the top of my head, 40 times. There's only two times out of that 40 times that the atmosphere has been electric. And one of the games was against Italy, you remember it. They scored the last kick of the ball. And one was an Old Firm Cup final. I don't like it.
What is
and
the especially as a player, from a player's perspective, but we know everybody that's listening to this knows what's wrong from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, you just need to look at it. Behind the goals, they're too far away. Even the stand, the main stand, and the stand across for it, still too far away. You need the fans close to you. You ask any player, and I bet my bottom dollar, any player doesn't enjoy the atmosphere at Hampden.
Well, I've spoken to Scott Brown about this, and Scott Brown, at the time when Stuart Regan, God, remember him, was in charge of the SFA, he spoke to Regan and said, please, can we do something about this? Can we? The players hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a fan's perspective, from a journalist's perspective, we can understand that from the outside looking in. But that's the curious bit. I don't understand why the players...
It's an eerie atmosphere. You're not out.
These things, done it. Barry, this can be sorted quickly, right? And it seems to be laziness, because I go to Murrayfield routinely for Scotland games, and they put so much effort into trying to generate something.
The entertainment before a game.
It matters. What it does is it changes the mindset. People that might be marching towards Hampden with this kind of morose attitude can get lifted purely by a bit of effort, a bit of razzmatazz. It works. It sells it. And Scotland... As a national team at Hampden,
we need to manufacture an atmosphere now.
No.
It certainly helps. I'm with Parks on that.
If I walked into a party and the DJ's playing Edelweiss, I don't feel as if I want to go on the dance floor and start.
Edelweiss?
Whatever it was, right? What was it? Edelweiss.
that's you going back into the days when your haircut was stylish, Parks, Edelweiss.
But you can generate... You can set a tone, you can lift people by whatever, you can generate something. The SFA have nothing in place to give people a feel-good fight.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. Surely if the team's exciting, that's all you need. That builds the excitement.
The build-up to a game is so important in terms of... See, you're sitting in that dressing room and you hear a bang, a loud noise outside, whether it's the music, whether they've got fireworks going off. It gives you a buzz to get out there. Now, every time I played at Hampden, apart from the two games that I mentioned, I never got that. It was difficult.
What's it
for
like
the players.
Inside then? Are the dressing rooms too far away for the...
No, there's nothing up with the dressing rooms. It's just the setup of the stadium with the fans. Too far away. They need to sort it out.
Well, I think first things first.
I'm not blaming that on the result. I'm not blaming that on the result. But I don't think we create a good enough atmosphere. No,
well,
it doesn't.
In fact, when I was speaking to Gordon Strachan about this as well, he wanted to do away with Hampden. His opinion was take the games to Celtic Park and Ibrox. Because that way you generate a proper atmosphere. It's intense. Yep. The fans are right close to the pitch. And he felt, as Scotland manager, the best atmospheres that he was involved with were the matches that they had to play. One at Ibrox was against Georgia, and Celtic Park was the Republic of Ireland. And he thought... blew everything else away.
Yep.
So that is the way the players, management, everybody feels like that.
Yeah. Like, it's your national stadium at the end of the day. I still think the game should be played there, but they need to do something with the stadium.
Is it beyond us to do something technical and bring the pitch closer? Why is the SFA the only organisation that can't...
I don't know.
Recalibrate Hampden to make it a fan.
Well, do you know what you do? Do you know what you do? If you wanted to, because the stadium is what the stadium is, right? So instead of...
But surely in this day and age you can do something.
What you can do is lower the pitch.
Yep.
See, if you lower the pitch, then the stands you can bring in and it would get closer, and you'd put an extra, I don't know, 15,000-20,000 on the attendance. However, you put an extra 15,000-20,000 seats in there, if there's only 30,000 turning up as it is, it's just going to feel even more of a...
I was surprised with the attendance. I thought there would have been more. I do think we've got the right guy for the job.
Barry, this is the worrying thing. The worrying thing is that even the hardcore... These guys that come from all over, from up north, from the Isles, from wherever they come from, it's dwindling. Even the hardcore is dwindling, and I think that gives us a real problem. I think international football's got a real problem in general, actually, because there was a debate on the BBC on, what was it, Saturday night, Sunday night, where they're actually talking about, you know, it's getting boring winning these qualifiers. England shouldn't have to play qualifiers. Everybody down south is fed up with the two-week international break because it's stopping the Premier League. And that's all they're interested in. And I think it's really, these weeks that is foisted upon us when our own domestic campaign is up and flying and people are interested, it's all going, and then, boof, in comes, what was the name of that band, Patsy?
Edelweiser.
Suicide music in 2 weeks of no
domestic
football.
Listen, if your country comes, Cole, you still want to play with your country.
But do you want to come up to watch your country?
No, at this moment, off the top of my head, Barry, right?
I think of the Holland game, the Saturday. I think of the Italy game. I think of the France game at Hampden. But you're talking a decade ago. Why would people want to invest themselves into an experience which ultimately leaves you walking away from Hampden demoralised?
That's the second. I'm finding it hard to get excited about, and I've always been excited about Scotland, but right now it's a grind. It's a real grind, and the only thing that you can actually look...
Do you know when I was excited? I was excited when Gordon Strachan was in charge.
Yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed that. I thought the team...
Terrific.
I thought they made an absolute booby getting rid of him.
Oh, Stuart Regan again, that man again.
I thought some of the football they were playing. All right, they went through a couple of difficult results, but he actually got me back, and he got quite a lot of people back watching Scotland.
It was great. And by the way, think how far back we've regressed since we got short of striking. Look at the damage that's been done since we got short of striking. Look at where we are now. And then you think, what? That's so much time that we've just wasted. If striking was still there and still going, how much further ahead would we be right now? And that's, you know, again, I bring it back to Stuart Regan. Disastrous appointment, disastrous chief executive. And that was his, you know, that was the crowning glory of a disastrous time in charge of the SFA, that he called that decision to get rid of Gordon Strachan. And he called it on political reasons, because he wanted the team to go and train at Orium and all this other stuff. And Scottish football, our national team, has suffered in the back of it. I like Stevie Clark, Barry. I think he's got a chance. But my God, he's got it all piled up against him.
He's got, if one guy's going to get it right, I do think it'll be him. I do. I feel it's going to be a tough one for him. I do think we've got, if you look at the squad, we have got decent players.
I agree.
I think we've got good quality players. And I think it's a job that a lot of people would have wanted. But we need to start getting results.
Well, this is, let's go back. So let's go back to Friday night then, because like yourself, I'm looking at that squad, I'm looking at the group of players. We've now got players from Manchester United, Arsenal and Liverpool, a whole bunch of Premier League players. I don't see many Russians in the English Premier League. So you're thinking, you know, we should be able to put together a team. If we've got a manager who knows how to organise and structure them, Stevie Clark, that's his skill set completely there. Yeah. You're thinking, there's no reason we can't go out and get a result here. The way we started the match, I'm looking at going, brilliant. This is exactly it. It's almost like the Celtic kickoff as well.
Yep.
Went back the way to Liam Cooper. Liam Cooper put it up, the, you know, a long ball up the pitch. I think McBurnie goes up for a header. O'Donnell's got up. The ball's played inside. John McGinn. We had a shot at goal in the first 23 seconds. And you're thinking, this isn't Scotland. This is brilliant. This is what I'm hoping to see. And it's great for 10, 15 minutes. We got the goal, and it was the worst thing that could have happened to us. We just fell out of the game after that. My question to you is here, where did Steve Clark get it right, and where did he get it wrong, and what does he need to change?
It's a good question.
Buying yourself time there, aren't you?
You know, no, it is a good question. Where did they? I think we struggle up top. But who else we got?
Well, there's no options.
Listen, McBurnie gets a lot of criticism off people, right?
Gordon Parks.
Right, he gets a lot of criticism. Yeah. He scored 23 goals last year, which is a difficult league of championship. He's just got a £20 million move to Sheffield United. Now, a lot of people, you can say he's not worth that. Listen, that's just the market we're in just now. I think he's decent.
What is it you see in his game that gives you that impression?
Well, I watched quite a few games last year. Swansea, he just looked a good player. He could score goals. Hey, listen, at the end of the day, 23 goals. He can score goals, the boy.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you feel about Ollie McBurnie?
We're talking about a system that Scotland's playing. You need somebody that's,
well, we had the perfect,
tie the game up.
When I played in the Scotland team, we had the perfect number nine for us, and that was Kenny Miller.
Yeah.
He could play a lone striker himself. He could run channels. He could noise strikers, yeah, sort of centre halves up.
If Ollie McBurnie's worth 20 million, what price Kenny Miller then?
Yeah, but we played 4-5-1, that was us. We were set up, we weren't great to watch. But I tell you what, we got results. And Kenny played that lone striker role perfectly. Now, then it was up to three-four of the midfielders to get up and support. I don't think he got much support. That's the problem you've got. He's playing up there himself. Long periods of the game.
I actually thought he started well.
I thought
that he was part of the reason that we started so well, because he was up against some high towers in there. He wasn't shy in throwing himself into it.
Oh, he was up against some giant, some physical specimens of centre half.
He was putting himself about. But Gordon Parks will say the ball just can't stick.
Opinions. I don't think he's
Scotland's
a hold-up midfielder.
Under Stevie Clark's going to be a team that uses the width they've got hitting on
the counter,
which is perfect for us because we have got quality going forward. It's imperative, the guy that's the focal point. The players trust him to take a touch and link-up play.
I don't think that's his game, Parksy.
I know that. Right. So I'm not totally pounding Ollie McBurnie. I appreciate and respect his stats. But in that role, he's the wrong man. And you're right, who is there?
Who else is there? There's Lee Griffiths is it's going to take time for him to get back, because obviously he's had these issues, so hopefully he gets back, because he's similar to a Kenny Miller. Yeah. He likes to run the channels, he can take a touch, he can rail up defenders.
He can link.
But after that, he can link. But look, he has a goal machine. When he's hitting his peak,
so was it a mistake by Steve Clarke to leave him out of that squad? Because I heard,
because he's not played enough football. But you've got to be understanding, he's not played enough football, Lee Griffiths. I do think he will be the number one striker.
He's played more football than Stephen Naismith has this season.
Yep, true.
Stephen Naismith made the squad.
True.
We had that, but
we don't know.
We had the free kick at the end of the game that Charlie McGrew came close, but not close enough.
But you don't know what's going on in the background. Mm-hmm. Whether he's got to take his time, because he's been through a lot, Lee Griffiths.
Yeah.
You've got to be respectful of that. I think Neil Lennon's managing him in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
We just need him back as quickly as possible, but you've got to respect that he's had a few mental issues. So he will be, if he comes back fit and gets playing in the Celtic team, he will be the number one striker, and I won't have a problem then.
See, when you played for Scotland,
yes,
was there a lift up of level? Did you feel it? Because what I see is a requirement for more technical players. Keeping the ball, taking care of it, possession was a problem for us.
That was the thing that I was disappointed in. I look at the three you've got in the middle of the park. McTominay plays week in, week out for Manchester United. Every time I watch him, I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Callum McGregor, I think everybody knows what I think of him. I think he's a talented individual. John McGinn, I like John McGinn a wee bit forward when he's in people's faces. He's not the player that's going to go and get the ball and run a game of football, but I think he's crucial to having that middle of the park. Mm-hmm. I think Callum McGregor and McTominay probably have played better games in terms of keeping possession. At international football, believe me when I say this, you need to keep the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You need to, whether it's going side to side or going back away, you need to move the ball quickly. And that's something that we struggled with Friday.
That was the most frustrating thing, because, you know, especially
but you need three players.
Start the second half, right? Russia come flying out of traps. You're thinking, well, thank God we've got half time here. Stevie Clarke can get into them and start and get his message across. We came out, we were even worse at the start of the second half. Russia steamrolled us.
Mm-hmm.
There was one bit when we actually did start keeping the ball, knocking about, and it was exactly as you say, Barry. It was actually the back four and just into the midfield and back to.
Sometimes you've got to do that to take a sting.
But then
the
we
game.
Gave it away. Then the ball gets to Stephen O'Donnell, he gives it away, and the Russians go again and almost scored the second.
It's a poor mistake for the boy O'Donnell. He's admitted that, but I'll go back to the midfield three. McTominay playing with one at the biggest club in the world.
Yep.
Man U.
Supposedly.
Callum McGregor plays top level football here. He plays in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the first name on Neil Lennon's team sheet. He was the first name in Brendan Rodgers' team sheet.
And he looks as if he was born to play international football.
I thought John McGinn went down to the Championship last year and was unbelievable. What was people in for him for 30 million?
40 million, yeah.
Yep.
But these guys are all playing in a framework of teams that have good players, personality players, right? Scott Brown is no longer playing for Scotland, and you can feel the void, that kind of lack of personality. Did you feel as if MD got on top of the game?
No. You meaning proper leader on the pitch?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Somebody
that's a dying breed, Parsi. That's a dying breed in football, isn't it? Leadership.
Steve Clarke talked about that yesterday.
It's a dying
press
breed.
Conference, and he just said this new generation of players. Yep. And he's almost, he didn't say, but he's almost saying, you don't even want to raise your voice to them because they might take offence, they might take it badly.
See if you've got a leader on the football pitch, the leader could be having a piss poor game, but he'll still motivate what's run about him. Mm-hmm. He'll still make sure everybody's in their formation, he'll still encourage, he'll manage the team on the pitch. He'll do the captain's job. I don't think we've got MD like that.
Should Andy Robertson be our captain then?
He's playing it. Jesus, look what the guy's done.
It's one thing playing in a team with Sadio Mane and another one with Ollie McBurney.
Should he be Scotland captain?
Yeah,
he's playing top level football, playing with one of the best teams in Europe. Well, Champions League winner.
I know, but is he a leader?
Scotland look meek.
And is he a leader? That's
I don't know
question.
Him.
I like him. In fact,
I don't know him in terms of, you would need to be in between the four walls. He speaks very well, and I was listening to his press conference leading up to the game, and I'm thinking Stevie Clarke's got this group flying, buzzing, in training. As you says, he does. He comes across. He's a very, very intelligent,
yep.
isn't he?
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Great player. I don't know what he's like in between the four walls in a dressing room.
Well, the reason I'm asking you that is that I look at him, his performances for Scotland, and I think, is he taking on too much of a burden?
Yeah,
is he trying to do too much?
There'll be a lot of weight on the boy's shoulders, captain of your country.
But again, we're talking about systems again.
Mm-hmm.
The system for Scotland doesn't suit Robertson because Fraser's keeping his width.
Aye.
Now, automatically, you've got Andy Robertson's threat as a kind of overlap.
Yeah, because the three that play up top play more inside the two wide boys, so he's got that full left flank to run himself. So, but that's up to you to change the way you play. You come in, it's no Liverpool you're playing with. It's a national team, there's different players.
I think there's a bottom line here, and I think Stevie Clark knew it before the Russia game. He knows that we're not going through. And I think when he took the job, he knew this. He knew the damage was done. He's got five games to give Scotland an identity, a bit of passion around the place. Even if we lose tonight, we'll probably
even lose. If we lose,
if we get a,
got to be positive.
Well, right,
come on.
I know you're the one that points a finger at me.
I'm down, man. I'm down on this.
Here's what I'm saying: we will have three games then to go and win, to get a momentum, to get an identity. Pick the same players, consistency, get a programme within the squad that they all know they're working to. That is the Steve Clark way. Now let's make sure that the semi-final playoff is a game that we get Hampden.
We've all
fireworks on the line.
Here's the problem, right? We all knew that from the start, from the get-go. When Steve Clark comes in, do you know what? We're not going to get through this group. We all knew it. Just get as a team. Just get 11. Just get your 11. Get them ready. You've got until March next year. By the time we get to March, we need a Scotland team that you know is your best 11, that we all recognise as your best 11, that's got a pattern of play and a structure to it, that is ready to get through these.
See, out of interest, when's his contract run to? Is it 2022?
No, I don't think so. I think it's 2020.
2 year contract, you signed.
I think you've got to give somebody longer. I think you've got to have a plan.
See the way that you're actually talking there. I think Stevie Clark's definitely capable of doing
100%. 100%.
And this is where it's really bad timing in Stevie Clark's. But it's not his fault that we are where we are. He's not the guy to blame right now. He's the guy that's trying to fix it on our behalf. The problem is we've just been battered over the head so many times for so long, for 20 years without a tournament. I just think it's fatigue. It's fatigue with the whole thing now, and that's not Steve Clark's fault, but he kind of has to do something in order to put a shot in the arm for the nation, for the
Tartan Army. The funny thing talking about it is different for club football. We're all Scotland fans here, so our conversation's littered with the party. We're part of the heartache and the frustration of it. So when you're dissecting it, it's for the heart as well. You know, you're really desperate for Scotland to do
Scunnered, Barry.
Yes,
you said there that we should be optimistic, upbeat, looking forward to the Belgian game tonight. Now, this podcast is available for a week. So I'm sure that most of the people that listen to this will already know the outcome of tonight's match. We don't. I'm prepared to say that I think we might get a bit of a tanking.
I don't think we'll get a tanking. I don't think we'll win the game. I think Stevie Clark, with the kind of manager stroke coach he is, he'll have his set up difficult. Real difficult to beat.
No doubt about it.
Look, Belgium, I've got...
That's the problem, isn't it?
I can get through their full team. Their full team's just full of talent.
Yeah, but I was in Brussels, right? And I thought, I was really impressed with the performance that we put on that night.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you would expect from a Steve Clark side.
Yep.
Structured, organised, defensively compact. Everything was right about that performance. And we still ended up on the end of a 3-0 beating over there. And that was probably just about as well as we could perform on the night. So
I think any team that goes over there are capable of getting an absolute doing.
I agree, and that's why I say
he just needs to be set up. He's obviously, I reckon, for Friday night, Saturday, Sunday on the training ground, he'll be shaping the living daylights out of the team to make sure, as you just said, they're compact and difficult to beat and difficult to get through. I don't think if you go and you try and have a go at Belgium, there's only going to be one outcome. Let's be honest. Sometimes, we've spoken about this before. When I was in the Scotland dressing rooms, even in Rangers dressing rooms, getting into like Champions League games or getting into qualifiers with Scotland team, sometimes you've just got to say, right, do you know what? We're coming up against a better team with better players. Now, what we need to do is just frustrate the living daylights out of whoever we're playing against. And that's what we've done under, certainly see under Walter Smith, mm-hmm. and Alec when he took your job after Walter. We were, our foundations were built on frustrating whoever we played against.
Not having and the ball for long periods.
No, listen, there was times I must have played in games where I've touched the ball maximum 10 times.
Four of them's a header.
Aye, and the other six were slide tackles. But that's, we were honest about it. Mm-hmm. It's not about we never thought, we went out with a mindset, oh, we're going to get beat here. We knew we had a chance if we held on, nothing each 65, 70. Then they start to get frustrated. Then you see them start to pick wee arguments with each other. And that's when you can get at teams. Mm-hmm. When these better teams with better quality players start to get frustrated. So that was the key to our team talks and our setup when we were away, not just with Scotland, but with Rangers as well.
When you were going into Champions League matches.
Yep. I mean, if we went out 4-4-2 playing Italy at Hampden, right, we're going to go for them. I think Italy would beat us because they had better quality players.
I don't think anybody's
going to. I mean,
they did
beat us at the end of the night, but I'm talking about, see France, for instance, over in Paris. Faddy's goal. Mm. Now, I think the stats were ridiculous. Was it no something like 78% possession? Or even more than that. I think we had one attempt on goal and Faddy scored. But that, we went over there with that plan to go there and frustrate them. And as the game went on, see if you look back at 70 minutes, 75, you could see them start to panic a wee bit. Mm-hmm. Now, for them being top quality players, there's always a wee bit of panic because they're looking at, up at the scoreboard, right, 15 minutes to go. Then they start to force things. Then that's when you've got the opportunity to maybe get something. But obviously, we scored a bit earlier. So we're just thinking, right, do you know what? Two rows of five, don't move. Leave them with a ball. And do you know what? You get results. And I think that's what Stevie Clark will beat the back of his mind.
But that's why people were reasonably excited. He's not an exciting, flamboyant manager. What he is organised, structured, exactly.
But
what
that was, see,
exactly
the better Scotland teams I played in, that's what it was. We were just so organised. See, when we stepped out in that pitch, every single player, and I've heard so many interviews with the players that I played with, every single person knew their job inside out. Now, if something came through your area, you were held responsible.
Gordon Parks doesn't believe in shape.
I think shape's awful boring. But I think I saw signs on Thursday night, sorry, Friday night, especially with Forrest, mm-hmm. the discipline that he showed trying to protect O'Donnell. You can see that he's trying to, Stevie Clark's trying to drum
it. It is boring. See what you're saying, shape. Shape, I used to hate shape, yeah. But shape is the most important on
Barry,
the training
explain,
ground.
Explain, just in case any of the guys listening to this don't really understand what shape is.
You used to call it shadow.
Ah, it's the same thing.
So
shadow,
it's,
shape.
It's on the training pitch. And it's basically the manager, there's not a ball involved.
No, there is a ball involved. You're set up with the way that I done shape with the best managers. We shaped up against mannequins. So he would set the shape whoever you were playing in mannequins, where we could exploit them, where we had to stop them getting through. Basic stuff.
And he's walking you through when the ball's over there. Yep. I need my right back.
If the ball's in the right back area, Parts he'll know because he's been involved in professional football. The ball's in the right back area, where we should be as a team.
Yeah.
If it's in the centre back area, left back area, if a central midfielder gets it, where you've got to be.
It's repetition. It can be in the pouring rain. You can stand there. The players that aren't selected look at each other. They're reading the team, right?
That's the perspective you've had. The players that aren't selected. That's why you were sitting in the sidelines.
I do that with my team just now.
Shape.
But you can see.
And I say to them, listen, it's the most boring part.
Yeah.
But it needs to be done. Because they've got responsibilities when they get in that pitch.
Well, I'm going to say to you now, right? Parts is against shape.
He's not against shape. He didn't like it.
I was never involved in that. That's the problem. I was trying to say, but
he was always sitting in the dugout. Hey man, I'm getting
left
on
back,
that team.
Move 5 yards in.
I think when you go and collect that ball.
So,
I'll be you one of the mannequins.
you said there about the Walter Smith time in charge of Scotland. Also, Walter Smith had the European run with Rangers. I'm guessing that run to the UEFA Cup final, I'm guessing shape was 90% of what got
that 2 days leading up and the Scotland team and the Rangers team. 2 days leading up, that's when Walter took the training. Never took it before it. At international level, it was the late, great TB, Tommy Burns and Coisty, who'd done all the training. And the day before, 48 hours before, when we went to Hampden to train, and then also when we trained wherever we were, whether it was at Dumbarton or wherever that else we went, Walter took over for the last 45 minutes of training. That's how long it can last, walking about, after sweating, and the pouring rain, blowing a gale. But it's got to be done.
It's torture, don't it?
Oh, it's torture. Listen, I never enjoyed it, but it is the most important part.
But that's the bit where automatically, in a match situation,
if something happens in your area,
you react automatically.
Yeah, aye, because it's drilled into you.
Aye, if something happens in your area, if your man gets away or you're not closing a bit of space and the team get through and score a goal, there's nobody else to blame apart for you. You've went through
it's
it.
It's amazing how when you see the passage of playing away, it develops. They can call it spot on and you react automatically to the way it's working out, right? And
that's, it's repetition.
That's repetition.
Well, football players are stupid, aren't they, in general? So you need that sort of repetition.
What are you trying to say, like?
I'm looking at two. You need the repetition.
Football players have got an...
Hammer home the message.
Football players have got an inherent built-in understanding that they can relate to the way it works. So...
Yep.
If you take a guy off the street and put them in shape, they wouldn't know what
to do. No, he would struggle. He would eventually get it if you kept working with him. But it's, for me, the most boringest part of being a footballer, but it's the most important
part
as well.
Especially when you're going against a better calibre of side. Because I would imagine that in normal domestic games, you're playing off the cuff a wee bit more. You're doing what you want to do. You're reading the game.
No, the way I do it, I look at all the opposition I play against, and then we set up against... First and foremost, you've got to let the guys know what they're going to be coming up against. Mm-hmm. They're not just going out blind and thinking, right, are they playing 4-4-2 or 4-3-3? But then when they get into areas, it's up to them to go and... It's only a guide. Without the ball. With the ball. Go and do
just
your own thing. Go on and enjoy it and go and show what you're capable of doing.
Right, let's round this wee bit up. Patsy, give me a scoreline for tonight, which we can then prove is wrong later on.
I think 2-0. Belgium.
2-0
I'd be happy with that.
I'll sign for that.
But aye, I'll sign for that as well. I'll go. Be 2-0.
I think we could be 3 or 4. And, but I'm being very pessimistic just now. It's just the mood that I'm in. Maybe we'll go and get a right good performance and get a 0-0 and a point and pretend that we're still involved in this group for a bit.
Ryan Christie makes a good point on Friday after the game. Disappointed, emotional about it. And he said, what an opportunity. What a great game to go in and show that you can actually match these world.
See, I'm not having that either. Listen, Steve Clark, well, that was the message Steve Clark was trying to put out yesterday. This could be the perfect match for us, Belgium, because, you know, it's not, there's no much pressure, nobody's expecting. Don't tell me that Belgium is the perfect match for Scotland right now. San Marino at Hampden.
Do you know what I go and say that you can match up against Kevin De Bruyne, you can nullify him, you can go and play against him? I'm just saying, if you're a professional player,
that's what they can do tonight. They can go and frustrate them. Is it going to work? I just hope it's not an absolute doing.
Yeah, and let's just keep in mind that the playoffs for the Nation League
aye, next March we've got another go next March. Yeah.
It's dependent on results, but it could be a Finland. You know,
it's not going to be Finland because they're doing really well in the group.
Bulgaria.
And then I think Norway or Serbia. I think it is.
Yeah.
Potentially in the final.
Well, listen, this is the best chance we've had in a long time. We've had 2 chances.
Well, let's talk about that, Barry. How frustrating, you know, looking back over your career. What was it, age 20, you won your first cap against Lithuania, and you went on to have...
19, I don't know, I did my research. All right.
But you were involved time and time and time again in these campaigns that sometimes we get close, sometimes we didn't get close. The fans kind of stuck with it. How depressing does it get for the players when you just can't get there?
It's a hard one. It's one of the ones where a few goes at it, get beaten a few playoffs. But when you get to the playoffs, we come up against so many teams.
Holland and England.
I mean, we thought we were through. We beat Holland 1-0. remember?
Yeah, Hamden.
I think it was Faddy that scored that as well.
Was.
Fletch came inside and
played off him
and he whipped it in, and we were in the dressing room thinking, oh, we're going to the Euros here, and then 4 days later we go and get absolute thumped.
Wesley Snyder.
Previous with England as well. Remember that one down at beat us 2-0 at Hamden?
Yeah, and then went
down there and beat them 1-0. There's been a few disappointments. It's one of the ones where you always look. I always watch the Euros or the World Cup in the summer. Always watch it and think what would it have been like to go there as a player or even captain your national team. And it's been far too long for us.
I would imagine if I was you, right, and I'm sitting there just now, that would be one of the deepest regrets.
It's the fact of the build-up. I would have loved to have been away for, I know teams go away for the 3-4 weeks before, and I would have loved to have done all that, whether you go to a different country and prepare, and that's the thing that I would have loved. And the build-up to it, the amount of spotlight it would have been on the country at the time, and you know what, it never happened. It's probably one of the biggest disappointments. But I would love to see this group or a group sooner rather than later do it.
That's the point. If we don't do it this time, I mean, you've actually got to roll a double six not to qualify for this tournament. If we can't make
there's a bigger picture as well. It's a final insult for Scotland.
Because there'll be games in our own backyard and we're not going to be there.
Swiss fans or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to do the usual. It'll be in front of our face, and that's hard to bear.
Right, so Barry, your Scotland career, talk me through the high points. What was the high points? Paris, I guess.
That's
as good as it got.
High points is captaining your country.
Now, am I right in saying it was Bertie Vogts that gave you the armband?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about wee Bertie.
lovely guy.
A dud.
He struggled.
He was a dud.
He struggled. That's what I'll say.
I need to ask a question. I've heard
he struggled.
He'd let you have a wee pre-match.
Listen, I was just about to say that. At night.
I know.
At night, the night before. And this is what he'd done with Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first night, we were down Cameron House. We all got told to come down to a meeting. I can't remember if it was 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock now. We've had our dinner at 7. We always get our dinner at 7. All the boys all sitting together. Then we had to meet in a room at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and we're thinking, right, well, maybe it's just a wee bit on whoever we're playing against, maybe a wee 10-15 minute, listen, make sure you prepare right, get in your bed, let's focus on the game in hand. So we're all sitting, and next thing these trolleys all come in with bottles of beer and bottles of wine, and what's going on here?
10 o'clock.
Aye, so he'd let you have a beer or a glass of wine before you went to your bed.
Which, night before the game.
Which I felt it was strange. But I made the most of it. Nah, I was never like that. I had one. You always had one. Or two.
I was going to say.
Nah, you had one or two. It was a strange one. Listen, it was a German culture. That was a culture that he brought.
Did any of the boys not take one?
No, the boys... You weren't forced to take a beer or a red wine. But that was strange. Listen, I got on with him. I felt he was a lost man. You could see. He was in a dark place.
In what way?
Just struggling. You could tell. You could see it was affecting him. Results. Obviously, the media was on him. On us as well, to be fair. It's not just about the manager.
What are you pointing at me for, Patsy?
It's not about the manager. It's obviously, he sets us out and we've got to go out and do our job. We never done our job.
It looked like disorganised chaos for what we were
It
saying.
Was, and there was a point in Faroes where we were 2-0 down against Faroes at half time.
I remember it well. I was sitting there.
And we're thinking to ourselves, no disrespect, but the quality we had in that dressing room and the players we had should be beating the Faroe Islands, and we just ended up having a ding dong at half time, players having their say. He never said anything. I think he just stood back and thought, Oof.
Well, he was seeing his whole career flashing in front of his eyes at that point.
Aye, so
he?
That's when.
So I have to say, sitting there that day, it looked to me from the press box as if the players had just taken it upon themselves, you and Paul Lambert in particular, to take on the responsibility. You were actually ignoring what was coming for the side. Like, the players decided to sort that out.
Had to do something about it at halftime, because you know what? That would have been the worst result, I think, in Scotland's history.
Was mortifying.
So we had to take, we had 45 minutes to try and sort it.
So take us inside that dressing room at halftime. What happens? Who speaks? What's Bertie saying?
Nothing. I think he was just taken aback.
Were you not looking to him to say what's...
Yep, and then TB was there, Tommy Burns.
And he started speaking because Bertie Vogts literally couldn't speak.
He took over, and then me, I was only young at that stage. Lambo, most senior player in the squad, stood up, had a bang at everybody, which I quite liked. It got me fired up, and then there was a few ding-dongs in terms of players having a go at each other, and that was the best thing that could have happened. See, if that never happened, that could have been the worst result in Scottish history. We went up, we went out there, and we still, listen, drawn with Faroes.
It wasn't a great result.
No, but we got away with one. We got away with one that game, and it was like, I knew when I got on that bus after the game, seeing all yous, yous were going to have a field day. And we've got to take, it's no, I just don't put the blame on the manager. We've got to take responsibility as well. Players have got to take some responsibility. It's not on the manager or the coaching staff as well. You've got to produce on a pitch.
Yeah, well,
and we never produced.
For me, the players got everybody out of hole that day by taking it upon themselves.
No, the first 45, no. The second 45 we did. The first 45 we were a joke. It wasn't good enough.
See, once you've, as a professional player, been in a situation where the manager has lost the power to speak, to talk, to communicate to his own dressing room, the guys then take over. You must know also, while you're playing that game, this guy's finished. He's done.
No, that doesn't even cross my mind. It didn't cross my mind.
It crossed your mind after it, though?
Aye.
You're looking at the guy.
Aye.
2-0 down against the Faroe Islands here, Bertie. Give us a help.
But I think sometimes that's when you need, you see what the players are made of in the dressing room, and sometimes the players have got to take over. Now, I've had that instance with Walter Smith's, where he comes in and bang, he lets us all have a go at each other. Sometimes I think that's the best way to solve the disappointment, what's going on in the pitch. Sometimes as players, you've got to sort it out as men, sort it, call a few people out. I get called out a few times, then I responded, but that got me fired up again. That got me saying, right, hey, do you know what, right, let's have a go then, let's get out of here and sort it. And I quite enjoyed that. I don't know about you, when you were involved in dressing rooms, I quite like calling people out. It shows what people are
made of
big
unlike
time.
Any other environment that you could imagine, if you've not experienced that silence, right, and the eruption, right, and the people being accountable, but it clears the air completely.
How often did you get the blame?
Often. I remember playing a cup tie at Dens Park, and
for who?
Not to talk about it.
And no, listen.
He's Stirling,
okay.
And John Brownlee was a manager. John Brownlee, good coach.
Yep.
We came in at half time, 1-0 down, and John Brownlee basically said, everybody take a seat, right? Everybody turn around and look at him, and pointed at me. You give the ball away. You give the ball away. It's your fault. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. I gave the ball away at the opposite end of the pitch. 4 or 5 passes going by, and the whole hell broke loose. Everybody pointing their fingers at each other. It helps galvanise. It helps lift.
Yep.
What else can you do? I've been at dress rooms under Alex Smith, experienced manager, who's basically said, I've tried my best, I've got no more to say, you sort it out. And you do. And it's fascinating, because it's unlike any other. It can be a volatile, I'm not saying a violent place, but it can be not for the faint of heart, right? You have to respond to it.
There's been times where you're squaring up to people.
Yeah.
But listen, it's forgot about after the game. But that shows a bit of passion. That shows that people are wanting to do something. I like that side of it. As long as there's nobody rolling about and whacking boots off people's heads and all that. But if there's a wee bit of fisticuffs, a wee bit of squaring up, a few home truths told, I don't mind that.
But that's what makes it unique. It's almost like a kind of
a controlled environment for, because you know, if it
gets
out of hand,
somebody, but you two are a pair of dinosaurs, you get that? This what we've been told now about the modern generation, all that can't happen anymore. You're built in front of HR before your studs hit the dressing room floor.
Aye, well,
different. You're having to deal with that as a manager now. Different.
Aye, well, it'd be fair. It's hard to go and find these players that are mentally, when you can come in and have a go and they respond to that. Some players can't now.
People are weak now.
Yeah, but I've got a good group. I've got a, especially at my level, I've got a brilliant group. I can come in and have a pop at them and they respond to that.
Do you know, this is the difference though, right? And it is, it's modern, it's a generational thing, and there's no doubt about it. This generation, glued to their mobile phone, their life's on behind a screen, actually don't really communicate very well with what's in the real world because they're too, that's my view anyway, and I'm the father of a teenage daughter, so I'm well placed to comment on it. But when you were coming up, and this is, maybe it might even be the last sort of a generation of, well, it certainly was YTS, wasn't it? You were?
Aye.
Rangers.
Yep, yep.
Tell me what that involved in terms of the making of you as a man, what you had to go through, because you wouldn't get away with it right now.
Well, I mean,
clubs would be getting shut down for
I went through what I thought was hell for a couple of years. I mean, in at 8 in the morning, if I was late, you're getting bawled and shouted at. You had to do all your jobs. You had to go and train. You had to come back.
All the jobs being what?
Cleaning boots, toilets. I was in the staff room. Now, I had to do the staff kit. Now, you can imagine.
Inside Ibrox?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can imagine a staff room with Walter Smith, Archie Knox, John Brown, John McGregor. Four. Mm-hmm. I would probably
men's
put...
Men's men.
Aye, proper men. If something wasn't done right, it would just get flung back in my face, get told to go and sort it out. I had to clean their boots, I had to clean their toilets, I had to make them tea and toast. And I don't know how many journeys I made for that marble staircase up and down when I come down with Archie Knox's tea. That's stewed, if I can get that back up. Up and down. There's too many tea bags in. I asked for 3 tea bags, back up, toast, soggy. Now, you've got 2 minutes to get in, you know what I mean? So it's a fair wee jaunt I had. So it was a mental thing. It was a mental thing for me. And I tell you,
were you at Ibrox when Barry Robson and Mijo Robertson were coming through?
Barry Robson was the year below me. Joe Robertson was a year above me.
Right. Mijo tells a story that Archie, one of the punishments that he used to get if the tea was stewed, he would send you out and make you walk round the Ibrox, walk round the pitch, and it could be in the pouring rain, and they wouldn't give you a jacket to wear.
I wish you'd done that with me. That's an easy punishment. I get worse than
and
that,
he used
believe
to forget
me.
About you.
Huh?
Well,
then I get sent out, my punishment's sent out the back of the govan to clean the, there's a verge, I had to clean all the rubbish. I get sent to work with the ground staff, on the pitch maintenance.
Yeah.
Just for
doing
my job's right.
But Jack was pointing is that is the makings of the player.
Oh aye.
You don't realise
we were in
the
there
time.
At 8 o'clock in the morning, I never left Ibrox. 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Age
back in about 7:30.
Age 15,
yeah. 16. But, aye, but I used to walk back for the train thinking, I don't know if I want to do this. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
Well, you
but
said
you, know what?
You felt you were being bullied.
Not bullied, it was a mental... They tell us it was mentally to see if I can handle pressure being put on me. And I kept at it and I kept at it. And do you know what? It's a bit... Seeing I look back, it was brilliant for them.
Here's a school
brilliant
thought.
For them.
Charlie Miller. Charlie Miller came through and I'd get put into the first team dressing room at Rangers as a 16, 17-year-old
he was
boy.
Charlie was 2 years above me.
But Charlie had something, right? The dressing room, I can think of players that came through at that kind of time. Talented boys that couldn't cope. Mm-hmm. Couldn't cope. Charlie had an answer for it. Charlie would be the one that would be leading the slaggings and stuff like that, right? So he was mentally strong enough and equipped to deal with it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were, but you learned how to cope, and it was things like that. I remember getting a...
What did you do to Archie Knox's tea?
I'd done a few things to it. I'd done more than... It was... what can I say? It's one of the ones where... Do you know what Archie was? He was a tough man. I mean, I used to have bad dreams. Like, all we'd hear was be Ferguson every morning. for 45 minutes where it would go and get me a pair of slips, wait 5 minutes, name would go again, pair of socks, shout me again a couple of minutes later, these socks are nae fucking use here. I need another pair. I way back up the laundry back doing. My boots are no clean, right? Go and get them clean.
Did you dread going in? Did you dread going in? Because it's a dream for a Rangers fan to go into training at Ibrox. Did you dread going in at times?
I loved the training. I dreaded that 2 hours before training and the 5 hours after training. I dreaded. But do you know what? It was mentally, it made me mentally tough. It did. It was a great...
But what did you do to his tea? Confess?
No, I'm not confessing. Archie's a good friend.
Archie, I know what he did to your tea.
Right, listen, we've gone way off track, right? But obviously Walter figures significantly in your Scotland story as well. Was that that period of Walter Smith followed by Alex McLeish,
I think,
Paris and all that?
What Walter coming in and just coming in to manage the national team was brilliant in terms of the setup. Everybody knew, as I said, I'll go back to what I said, everybody knew their job. Now that's what was focused on. This is the way we're going to play. This is the way we're going to do it. We're going to be hard to beat. And we'll see where it takes us.
And you've gone from your situation where the guys are looking at the manager, Bertie Vogts, knowing that he was a lame duck manager at that point.
Yep.
What difference does it make to the harmony within the squad when a manager who's got no credibility is replaced by someone who's all credibility?
Well, first of all, when he walks into a room, you see everybody sitting up straight and just focusing. That tells you everything about him.
That must be really good from a player's perspective. When you see that, then you know you're engaged. You know this whole group of boys.
Because I was only young when I was there. I didn't really see it every single week because I was in and out of the first team, obviously with the pressures of 10 in a row. And then I really seen what it meant. Because you're running about the first team players and you hear what he's like. Just commanded respect. But the way he spoke as well, you know what I mean? He spoke with authority. But no authority in terms of you're shit scared of him. He was one of the managers where I was desperate to play for. I was desperate to go out and do a job for him. He just brought that. And then he had his obviously two lieutenants at the side, you know what I mean, who were the runabout. Tommy, brilliant guy, loved him, joined in training. And Coisty, obviously, you know what Coisty's like, chirpy, runabout. So it was a great mix. You had obviously the main man there, and obviously they two would take training. As I says, if we met up on a Sunday, the game wasn't it the Saturday, they would take training Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Walter would step in on the Thursday and the Friday, 45 minutes each day to set us up. And as I says, you knew
everybody had
so
a job.
So you're at that pitch, my first thing is I'm making sure I'm doing my job, because if I don't do my job, I'm getting my head ripped off, you know what I mean. But he was a great manager. No great gets used too much, but he was.
And
I just there was an aura about him.
Yeah.
And I just love managers where you're desperate to go and
play for them.
Yeah. Play for them.
And when McLeish comes in,
never changed then.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He was clever enough to say the everyone's set in stone. Aye. Here. We don't.
And do you know what? And I loved that. He's come in and he's just thought, do you know what? Everything's going well. Maybe just a couple of things in terms of set pieces he would change, but no, we're not changing our game plan. This is the way we're staying, and we'll go forward.
So that's your best of times as a Scotland player, but it's also the worst of times, I imagine, because at that point you're thinking, we can do something. We've got a team. This is the team that's going to go.
Yeah, I really thought under certainly they two managers, I certainly thought we had a real chance. I mean, if you look back in the squads, and I think all the players that played in the squad, I'll agree with me here, we never had an outstanding individual. What we had is very good players. Not just good players. One thing, the work that these guys put in on a football, not just match day, training, the work ethic of that group, both Walter and Alec had, was frightening.
It looked from the outside as if it was almost you inspired each other to work harder, as if every time you came together.
Aye, we just had that, we just had a real togetherness, you know what I mean? That we're in it together, in the trenches together. It's one of the ones where we went out and whoever we played against, as I says, listen, it might have not looked good on the eye to watch, but whether it was Italy, whether it was whoever, France, well, that's we thought we could get a result.
That's what we're looking for Steve Clarke to bring to this
and
current
I think
squad,
he will. I think he will get that. I do.
So, really good times, came close. George Burley.
Aye.
Now, I'm guessing that if you've been inside that dressing room and looked at Bertie Vogts, right, and just
how long we got left in this?
We're nearly done. Right, and you're looking at Bertie Vogts, you're hopeless, hopeless, right? Nice guy, hopeless. In comes Walter Smith, proper professional, Alex McLeish, this is good, this is, we're actually going great here. All of a sudden, in comes George Burley. See, at that point, do you not think yourself, that's us, chances
no,
gone?
Cause, no, that, was me, that wasn't my initial reaction. My initial reaction was he had done good jobs, i.e. Ipswich. Obviously, was a decent player. He was a good player. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was.
And it just didn't work out for the simple fact as I don't think he rated me either.
Why? What made you
I don't know. I just got that vibe. I don't think it was a good mix with who he brought in either. The coaches, Stephen Presley and Terry Butcher.
What was wrong with that? What did you feel was wrong with that?
I just didn't think they were right for the camp. I just didn't think they were right for the job.
Why?
First, Elvis was still a player.
He was still at Celtic at the time, wasn't he?
Yep. And Terry Butcher was an awesome football player. But he was England captain. That mindset is... I know Stevie Clark's brought in Stevie Reid, who I know really well. I played with Reid at Blackburn. I know he's Irish. He played, I don't know how many caps he had, but I was just that way where I like.
It troubles me as well. I saw a picture. I saw a picture of Terry Henry and
Sean Maloney.
Sean Maloney in the paper wearing Belgium tracks.
It doesn't look right, doesn't it? I'm like that. Whether it's right or wrong, that's just my opinion.
And what made you think that George Burley wasn't having you?
I don't know, just when you get that vibe for a manager. And I'm fine with it. Listen, that doesn't... You get managers that rate you, you get managers that don't rate you. That's life. I just got the vibe straight away that I wasn't his cup of tea, which I was fine with.
But he played you, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yep. He did play.
You think he was doing it almost against his will?
Not against his will. Because he's a manager at the end of the day. I think you're a manager, you've got to make tough decisions. I just didn't think he liked me as a footballer, which I've got no problem whatsoever.
Talk to me though, because I think this is the most important thing. I might be wrong, Barry, but for me, international football, as a journalist, we get to dip in and out of the camp, right? To go up to the hotel for press conferences, to travel with the team on the plane, run about the airports, and you get the sense of this is, you know, the boys are really connected.
Enjoying
it's a,
it.
There's a great atmosphere around it. You know when it's a happy squad.
Yep.
And you know, and this is, journalists get a lot of stick for calling things out and say, look, this is going wrong, this is going awry. It's because we are lucky enough to get close enough and you can feel it. Mm-hmm. You can feel when it's gone. And the feeling around from the outside, the George Burley squad was, this is disastrous.
I wasn't enjoying playing under him.
Is that what led to how it all ended for you?
No, that was just my own stupid mistake. Well, let's be honest. But there's nobody else that I can sit here and blame.
It's Bertie's fault.
I'm not going to sit here and... It was nothing to do towards the management team. It was nothing to do towards...
Well, it's funny, but you say that. I'm going to say to you, if Walter was still in charge at that time, I don't think a group of players would have went to the bar, and stayed up that late that night if Walter was still in charge, because I think the players didn't have a great deal of respect for George Burley.
Aye, but people say it's all night, right? We got back into the hotel. What time do you think we got back
about
in the hotel?
2:30 in the morning, because I was on the plane.
Well, I would say 3:30 we get back in.
Right.
No. That's when you have your first beers, when you're allowed to have a beer and you finish at 7:00. I don't think that's a all night session, is it really? Is it?
Till 7 a.m. I know what you mean. You've not started at 7 p.m.
Don't try and drag things out for 3 hours. It's not an all night session. There is no chance. When you have a beer.
And what to say to that?
What do you think?
I think 3:00 in the morning or 3:30 to 7:00 in the morning is all night session.
When you have your first beer at 3:30?
Irrelevant. It's an all night session because you're doing it through the night.
The giveaway is when people are turning up for the breakfast.
So it's an all day session if you do it 3:30 to 7:00?
See, we're splitting hairs here.
No, is it an all day session? Is it an all day session if I start at 3:30?
No, what we should do, we should reenact it, right, and see if...
No, I'm going to answer my question.
I'm not answering.
Is it an all day session if it's 3:30 in the afternoon to 7:00?
It's an afternoon. It's an afternoon session.
Right, everybody's got their opinion. I've got my own opinion.
But what I'm saying to you is, because of the mood around the camp, I was at the airport. But yeah, I remember getting on it, but I could tell there was steam coming out your ears. A lot of the boys, there was a lot of unhappiness. Am I not right in thinking that you didn't really have the option even to go back to your house because you had to be back in such and such time?
Aye, you were
people were resentful of that.
Aye, but listen, rules are rules. If you're not
the players didn't like it.
Aye, I know, but at the end of the day, if you're manager, you put rules out. You happy? No, I'm no. But you've got to do it. You've got to go back to the hotel. You've got to go back to the hotel. No spitting dummies out here.
Mm-hmm.
But was I frustrated after the game? Yes, because we got absolutely thumped and we were poor.
Mm-hmm.
Should I have went and had more than a few beers? No, I shouldn't have. But I did. Which was the wrong thing to do.
And it's stuck with you, isn't it? That whole thing. And I know that you don't even like the photograph from the bench at Hampden.
It's stuck with us, but it's happened, isn't it? I can't rewind back time. I can't do it. I made a mistake. It ended me getting over 50 caps. I'm the one that's...
Yeah. I know, that's what I'm saying.
I'm the one that's took the punishment for being a absolute twat.
Many more caps you think you would have got? Many more years would you have played international?
Well, I played till I was 37, didn't I? I retired when I was 37. That's the thing that frustrates me more than anything else.
Yeah.
Know the picture. Missing out and playing more games. Because I still had another 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I played another 5 or 6 years after that. Because it just didn't... People need to remember this as well. For my own silly mistake, it never just ended my Scotland career. Ended my Rangers career.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a high price to pay. Do you think it was too high?
You've never really owned it.
Was it a high price to pay? What, in terms of the
magnitude of what you actually did to what actually the impact of it? I mean, not to get over 50 caps, not being in the Hall of Fame is a hard thing to take.
Yeah, it's a sore one when you see how close you were. I mean, I missed quite a lot of games, friendly games, because the managers at the time wanted to get other guys game time. So they would say to the guys who were maybe playing regular, listen, just leave that out. So I maybe have got it if I'd played the friendly games.
How many caps did you end up with back?
46.
46, 4 away.
Aye, because I played, as I say, that was, happened when I was 30, was it 30 or 31? So I played till I was 37.
April 2009.
And I played in England's Premier League till I was 34 and a half, so...
Levine asked you to come back a year later?
Yes, he did.
How difficult a decision was it not to?
To be fair to Craig Levein, he gave me time because he wanted me back, which I respected. I had... A few conversations on the phone with Mick Oliver,
yeah,
who was there at the time. He was dealing with it.
Your liaison.
Yep, he was dealing with it. First of all, they wanted a decision pretty quick. I says, look, it's not one of the decisions. It's just been sprung on top of me. Can I go and speak to my family? I spoke to my family. I spoke to ex-teammates. I spoke to people who I value their opinions. But at the end of the day, the decision comes down to myself. I can only ask people's opinions on what to do. But I sat on it for a couple of weeks and I decided no.
Why?
Because it would just have been a media circus. I didn't think it was going to be fair on the guys who were already in that Scotland squad. If I turned up in that Scotland squad, it wasn't about the Scotland players that are there the now and what game were we leading up to. It was going to be, oh, look who's back in camera, just totally focused on me, which I don't think that's right. I'm a team player. And I think
it's a big sacrifice to make. When you just said there about not getting the Hall of Fame, you're in your head, four more games here.
I know. That's all that crossed my mind. That's all I could think about at night. That's all I could think about during the day. I actually took away my performance for. I had to make a decision. See my next couple of performances for Birmingham. They were all right, but the manager could see it was affecting me. Alec, and he says, what's going on, what's your thoughts? I says, I don't know, I don't, honestly, I want to go back, of course I want to play in my country, but I've got these other thoughts about, maybe I shouldn't think about other people, maybe I should just be selfish and do it, but I decided no, and I gave away the 50 caps, and that's the punishment that I got, which... It's a hard one to take because you want to get in that Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You want to get your name up on the board or you want to be recognised that you earned.
I still get the impression if you could, you'd be putting on your boots tonight to go out and play against Belgium.
I miss it. Look, what used to absolutely do my head in, and I don't mind repeating this. People used to criticise me. He's no fully committed to Scotland. I was always fully committed to Scotland. The reason why, I missed so many games was down to the manager.
What one?
The managers, if it was friendly games. Because, you know, we used to play maybe three or four friendlies. So it was an opportunity for the players that never had game time to go and see if they could handle the pressure of playing with a national team. Now, I did miss a few qualifiers through injury, but they were legitimate, always turned up, always seen the physio, and the doctor had to sign you off. So you never feigned an injury. I was always fully committed. And who wouldn't be fully committed? I was captain. Your captain. Your leader of your country on a football pitch. And it does my head in. And I still get it for some people. But until they actually see me and when I'm speaking about it, I'm more passionate about it. And I still want the Scotland team the now to do well.
How you be watching the game tonight? In the house? Are you going to the ground?
No, I watch it in the house.
You ever been back to Hampden as a Scotland fan?
Yeah, I went back to watch the... Was it a Poland game?
Right.
Two each?
Under Gordon Strachan?
Aye. I went back, and to be fair, I get welcomed. There was a couple of people doing a double take. But I'm still a Scotland fan, as I say. I still watch them. I still want them to do well. But if anybody asked me about my career, that's only... What could I put? How could I put it? It's only
it's
black mark.
Because
I've lost the big games. I've lost, I don't know, cup finals or whatever. But not to get to your 50. But listen, there's only one guy to blame. And that's... myself, so life moves on.
Aye, well, we're ending this podcast in a bit of a sour note.
We're going to talk about something.
What was that? What was the name? Idolvice or something? I'm feeling.
I can't look at strength to even talk about it.
Taking the shoes out, laces out my shoes here.
Does not feel as though the best days are behind him.
Guys, thanks very much for listening. And this has been the Fergie Time podcast, and it's available on all good podcast platforms.